Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for aging and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track.
Welcome to episode 5 of your Aged Care Compass podcast. Coral isn't with us today, so I've asked Janine, one of our consultants, a registered nurse and a former ACAT assessor, to have a chat with me today to talk about the things an ACAT assessor looks for when they do your assessment. Welcome, Janine, and thanks for being with me today.
Michelle, thank you for the invitation.
Pleasure. Just to refresh our knowledge, what programs do ACAT assessors approve for?
So the comprehensive assessors, who are the assessors with the aged care assessment teams, they're, just to refresh over a little bit, they're clinically trained. So they might be registered nurses or occupational therapists or physiotherapists or social workers, and they have experience in aged care. So they use these skills to assess for a wider range of services than those entry-level regional assessment services. So these services are for people with higher needs or those who might require a more coordinated approach to their service provision. So the programs and services that the ACAT assessors will deem you eligible for will include home care packages, flexible care options such as transitional care and short-term restorative care, and they can also assign eligibility for respite and permanent entry into aged care facilities.
Okay, so they're doing actually quite a lot then, aren't they?
They are, because they can also cover those entry-level services as well if they're needed at the time.
Right. And I know the gold standard for ACAT assessments was always an in-home assessment, but since COVID, this has changed, hasn't it?
It has, Michelle. And look, in my opinion, a home assessment is best practice, gold, the best type of home assessment you can have, because ACAT assessors are actually looking for the whole picture of the physical environment as well. But due to COVID, and also due to the high numbers of aged care assessments that are coming through now for people, certain areas throughout Australia may be remaining doing telephone assessments. It's different areas in different states. So really, it's just up to that area as to what type of assessment you will receive.
Right. Okay. And in my experience, some people feel that having an ACAT assessment is like a pass-fail type exam, or they believe it means that they'll be sent to an aged care facility, and so they're quite fearful. Can you explain what the purpose of the assessment is?
I certainly can, Michelle, and I've experienced this many times when I go into people's homes, unfortunately. So the purpose of the ACAT assessment, first and foremost, is to help that older person remain living in their own homes and to try and make the least risk to them in to both physical, medical, and their emotional health while they're living at home. Mm-hmm. Placement in an aged care facility is always the last option, unless that's what that older person feels they're ready to undertake, to move right into an aged care facility. It's a very common fear that we're going to turn up and they're going to be taken away to an aged care facility. I've actually been introduced as the person from the nursing home. I've been introduced as the person that's come to talk to them about moving into a nursing home. And it's awful, and it takes a long time to sort of break down that trust and explain to the person, no, I'm not here for that, unless that's what their wish is at the time. And it can be set up by a lot of things. It can be set up by the people who refer. They might make an off-the-cuff statement like, this person's coming out to talk to you about moving into a facility, or it can be other health professionals or GPs or family members who are trying to say the right thing, but unfortunately mightn't understand the fear. Yeah. And also, it's a very common fear that I'm going to come in and organise you to be removed from your home, or that the ACAT assessor. This can be set up accidentally by family members or by other health professionals just trying to do the right thing, but make an offer the cuff remark, like this person's coming to talk to you about moving into an aged care facility. And the fear is real, because I know myself, if someone said that to me and I'd been living in my home a very long time and tried to be as independent as possible, that I would definitely not be opening up to this person that was turning up to the front door.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're talking about removing someone from their home and all their belongings. So totally understandable, that fear. And I think the media, as wonderful as it is that they get involved and expose things that are happening, that can also create a high level of anxiety, because, you know, you may not see the good stories as much as you see the bad stories. But it's a wonderful thing they're involved, but it's just something I think we have to keep in mind if you're seeing that time and time again. I think also, because there's so many questions in the assessment, if the older person doesn't understand what you're there for, it could become quite challenging as well, and you could become quite scared. Why is this person asking me all these questions, when really that assessor is just trying to pinpoint the best way to help the person?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And the other fear, I think, is because of the pressures now of all the numbers of people requiring assessments, everything has to be discussed on that assessment. So it may be brought up, may you look at having respite or moving into an aged care facility? And it will be in that discussion. And unfortunately, if that's the one thing you're scared of, that may be the one thing that you latch on to, because it will get discussed these days all in the one assessment. And, you know, people talk to their friends. And
yes. So as an assessor, what were you looking for when you did an assessment?
Well, what I'm looking for is to assist that older person to live at home, as we say. So I'm looking at the whole picture. I'll be looking at their physical environment, where they live, their mobility, different risk factors. It'll include asking them about their medical health and how they sleep and their pain and their medications, some questions about their emotional health, their cognitive health, including their mood and their memory.
Yep.
And we also delve into their social situations and how they're supported. And very importantly, if they have a carer, we'll be having a discussion with the carer as well as how they are coping. So it's quite a lot of intrusive, would seem, questions if you're not understanding the purpose of the assessment.
Yep. Some of the questions that you ask people may surprise them. So can you talk about the sorts of things you ask people and why?
Yeah, so we will ask people how they're managing all their day-to-day activities, which they may find that that's a bit odd. Why do you want to know how I cook my meals, or how I get my shopping, or how I reheat my meals, or can I carry them around? We'll ask some things about how they pay their bills, how they get out to appointments, whether they're feeling lonely. Some other questions that will be about their continence, which they may not be prepared for that kind of questioning, but we can delve into that a little bit more a bit later. You know, questions like, do you like going out with people? Is that something you want to do more of? Or are you a stay-at-home kind of person? So they're quite personal questions, how you think your memory is going.
So you're actually getting like quite a true picture of
That's
the person,
right.
aren't
You're
you?
Trying to get a whole picture of the person and what they want. Yeah.
And so you also look around the person's home, don't you? And why is that?
We do. We do, probably from the minute we're out the front of the house. We're not busybodying around a person's home, but having a look, because once again, the whole picture, you know, are these people able to enter their homes? Are there stairs at the front of their homes? May they be at risk of having a fall? Are they able to clean their house and their bathroom? We'll look in their bedrooms and say, well, can you manage getting in and out of bed? Or in the bathroom, can you get on and off the toilet? We may even go for a wander in the garden and have a look and say, you know, how are you managing your gardening? I've met people that have been able to get out of their house for 2 years because there's stairs at the front, and that's not
Oh.
something they get quite embarrassed. And it may be a simple fix, such as a ramp or something like that, but people don't like to mention these things. And sometimes
Yeah.
you just have to go for a bit of a wander around and have a chat and look at things that are happening in the home. Not because you're being a busybody, you have to
Yeah,
explain,
yeah.
but just if you can think of anything that will help them remain in their home, then it's worth having that chat.
That's such good information, because when you understand why the questions are being asked,
That's
you
it.
probably are more forthcoming. As
That's
you know,
right.
this person's here to help me, not to put me into a nursing home.
That's exactly the case, Michelle.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's
yeah.
exactly the case.
So, Janine, what were some of the things that you felt were really important for people to tell you about when you assessed them?
Well, personally, when I assess people, the first most important thing for me, once I've built some rapport with that person and got to know them, is what their wishes are and what their goals and what they're having problem with, because a lot of the time we think we know what the older person needs and what they need a hand with, but to them that may not be their major concern. They might be quite happy living with something that we think, I couldn't live with that. So it's very important to know what's important to them, and sometimes it can be just something quite simple. So getting to know what they want, what would make them feel safe at home, and also what their goal is. Do they want to stay at home? Do they want to eventually move out? That's what would always be my most important go-to to begin with. But of course, you take into consideration family members and very much carers. Information is gathered from lots of people. There might be a report from the GP. So everyone's information is taken into consideration. And obviously, if the person's cognition is quite badly affected, then, a different tact is taken when you're looking at outcomes and what the best pathway to take would be. It's very important to connect with the carer. That's probably my second important, and assess how they're coping, because how they're coping will help you work out the urgency for need for these people. It's very important to look after the care. If the care is not coping, we need to get those services in or change of care a lot more quickly than we may have otherwise.
Right. Okay, so that's carer stress, obviously.
Yeah.
Were there any other topics or issues when you did an assessment that sort of set alarm bells off for you, or made you aware that urgent help was needed?
Well, yeah, there's often quite random things that might set off those alarms, but I would say the first, like you just mentioned, is carer stress. That
Right.
is a major trigger for urgency for care. Other things might be, we may be able to pick up on a medical change that may have happened to someone. Sometimes, for an example, an older person can have a urinary tract infection, not have any symptoms, but become a lot more confused. If they have a medical situation that's changing, they may develop a delirium, which requires medical care. So that's something we're always looking out for, and making sure that families and carers understand what a delirium looks like for in the future. Increasing falls. If someone tells me they've been having more falls, or the other thing is they may always say, I don't fall over, but I have a lot of trips, or I have a lot of near misses. That's also a very big trigger to have an assessment, because we want to decrease their risk of having a fall. If you have a person who has cognitive issues, always wandering away from home is a very big trigger for urgent sort of intervention. And also, if someone has a change in their mood and is very depressed, or it might even be something like an uptake in their alcohol, triggers like that. So there's quite a few things that would trigger that a situation needs a bit more of an urgent response.
They're things you don't think about, you
No,
know?
and until you're there, you yeah, that's right.
So on the flip side, do you ever come across people who were, say, very stoic and told you that they didn't need any help? And if so, how do you deal with that?
I do all the time, and they're wonderful people, and I have nothing but respect for them because they've lived a life full of things that I can't even imagine, and they've been through vulnerable situations that I would know nothing about. So I have nothing but respect for these people, and I totally understand how fearful it must be to have someone come into your house and start what you think will be them telling you what you should be doing, which is not what we do, but I totally understand that that would be a concept they have a concern about. I think the important thing is to take some time and build some rapport with these people and listen to them, listen to what they're worried about first, and then try and build a bridge and make a relationship and prove to these people that you're not there to take away their rights and you're not there to boss them around or to make them do things that they don't want to do, that your role is simply there to make suggestions and to assess them for services that they might be eligible for. And understand sometimes this is going to take time. I mean, these people have had to be stoic for 85 years and get through things. We can't just expect to come in and all of a sudden, change things. And I think family discussions are very important. And when you have family, there's a lot behind that. And I know that Coral's written about that in her book about the good times to have these conversations. I've entered a home sometimes and nothing's been discussed. And I'm sitting there with the poor older person who is in a state of shock, not even knowing that I'm coming, to be honest. So I think time to have all these discussions and slowly with people will make a big difference to their fear. And explaining how the system works is a big, because although you can be stoic, if you wait too long in this system, you won't receive the services, because there's a waiting list for such a long time. And I think that's important for the older person and their family to understand. Yes, even if we just do this now to get you started in the system, because if you do need these services, it may not, there may be a 6 month wait. So, and just
Exactly.
they'll understand them.
I love that you talk about building the rapport and understanding the person's needs and goals. I just love that. It's so important. So, do you find people are reluctant to talk about certain topics?
I think if you come straight in and start asking them about their continence, yes, they'd be reluctant. I think it's just more of like what we've said. If you take a little bit of time, explain what you're doing and explain your purpose, then you can knock down a lot of those bridges. And in the end, people can be quite trusting of you and quite open. If you empathize with them and, give them a bit of time, most of the time, I think they will trust you. I know past experiences will come into it and past life experiences, but I think that continence questions are always difficult, especially if there's a room full of family or people or sitting there. You have to maybe move away from an area and just have a private conversation. And I think that once you start touching on questions about people's memory and cognition, that can leave them feeling very vulnerable, or you may be exposing a weakness that they think, someone might not be aware of. And I think we just have to think how we would feel being questioned about our memory and everything. So I think, yes, there's definitely topics, but if you can move around them a certain way, usually people can be quite understanding.
So after you completed an ACAT assessment, what happens then?
So after the assessor sort of takes into consideration all the information she's gathered, observed, heard, most importantly, what the older person would like. How what their carer has said to you, what the family, often a GP report, there might be specialist reports, and try and summarize that and put that together. But it's important to note that if the older person does have memory issues that are having a dramatic effect on their capacity to make decisions, then decisions are also discussed with family members, their representatives, in some states, enduring power of attorney or guardians. It just depends on what state that the person's living in. So once they've gathered all that information and discussed with the relevant people and the older person, they'll usually may discuss this, your case, with another ACAT team member, and then another team member called a delegate. And this will result in approvals for certain services and for respite and for permanent care, if that's what you have requested. And this approval will also reflect the urgency for the services approved. So as we said, there's a waiting list for everything. And if you're approved for a home care package, you'll then also be placed on the national queue for home care packages. And you should receive all that paperwork from the ACAT assessor. It should be about 2 weeks. I know sometimes it can be longer, but they generally say about 2 weeks. You'll receive all that written documentation.
Right. And that documentation is, so it's a summary of
It is a summary of the assessment, yep. And then it has any approvals that have been given and a letter saying that they've been sent on to the national queue if they are to receive a home care package.
Right, right. And that also would include, like, if they'd been approved for short-term restorative care or something like that.
That's right.
All addressed in there as well.
Yep, every approval that they've attended. So back that we were discussing, the transitional care, the short-term restorative care, home care packages, approval for respite, approval for permanent care, and they all would be allocated a referral code, and all that will be written on the documentation that you receive from the ACAT assessor.
Right. And does the documentation also tell them at what priority level they've been approved?
Yes, okay.
So medium priority, high priority.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So it's all in that document. So it's probably pretty important that people hold on to that document.
It's very important to hold on to that document. It is a very wordy document with many, many pages, but it's worth holding on to all of it just because there may be information you don't realise services may require on that. But yeah, I would not hand that documentation over to anyone without taking a copy, because it can take quite a while to get another copy of the paperwork.
Okay. So, Janine, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about if they're waiting to have an ACAT assessment?
Oh, look, if they're waiting, I think just have a think about how you're managing all your activities of daily living. Have a think about what you would like a hand with. And if you're a carer or a family member, exactly the same. Have a think of how you think they could benefit, what they could benefit from. It's even a good idea to have a few things written down because, as we know, at the time you go to an appointment and you can't remember all the important things, and you come out and think, I didn't ask about 1, 2, 3. So, yeah, I would take some time to think about, even jot down how you're managing. If you're having problems hanging your washing out, jot it. Just have a piece of paper for a couple of days, and also think about what questions you'd like to ask, because this is your opportunity to have a person there who can answer all of your questions about the aged care system, perhaps waiting times. It's just a good opportunity to utilise that person while you've got them there.
And that's good to know that it's not a one-way conversation.
No, definitely not. Definitely
not. No, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of our session. So, Janine, thanks so much for being part of today's podcast. I think you've given our listeners some great insight into the importance of giving all the necessary information to the ACAT assessor when they have their assessment. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure. And we look forward to having you all join us again next week for episode 6.
Hey Care community, thanks for listening to this episode. So you never miss a show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like to know more about what we do, head to our website, cmeacn.com.au.